You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the second of two podcasts on IBD and obesity hosted by Med Learning Group. This two-part series is geared towards members of the multidisciplinary care team who manage patients with IBD and obesity, including gastroenterologists, gastroenterology nurse practitioners, and physician assistants. My name is Jillian, and I will be the host of today's podcast. I'm pleased to have Dr. Stephanie Gold here with me. She is an assistant professor of medicine in the Henry D. Janowitz Division of Gastroenterology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. Dr. Gold is an acclaimed clinician and researcher in the field of gastroenterology, with a particular focus on inflammatory bowel disease. Her work bridges patient care, clinical research, and education, contributing to the advancement of both evidence-based practice and multidisciplinary approaches in managing complex gastrointestinal disorders. Welcome, Dr. Gold.
Thank you so much, Jillian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Gold, could you tell us a bit about your current research? Also, how long have you been managing patients with IBD and obesity? And what sparked your interest in exploring the interplay between these two conditions?
Of course. Thanks so much for asking. I'll actually start off with the second part of that question, if that's okay with you. I've had an interest in nutrition and how it impacts the human body and subsequent disease for many, many years. When I first started as an attending at Mount Sinai, I established a multidisciplinary malnutrition clinic for patients with IBD, and I saw many patients who were struggling with unintentional weight loss, sarcopenia, and even micronutrient deficiencies. Over the following years, I started seeing more patients with overweight and obesity and recognized the negative impact of excess body weight, and specifically visceral adiposity, on the clinical outcomes for our patients with IBD. Despite this, traditional weight loss strategies were so challenging for many of our IBD patients due to food restrictions, extraintestinal manifestations, medication uses, and disease activity. So in recognizing this impact of obesity and more specifically visceral adiposity on our patients, as well as the challenges with traditional weight loss strategies, we established the first ever multidisciplinary weight management program for patients with IBD at Mount Sinai, and it's both a clinical and research program. Today, we're studying novel, non-invasive techniques to assess visceral fat in patients with IBD, the impact of novel GLP-1s and other medications on adiposity, as well as inflammation in our patients, and the use of obesity phenotyping to offer more personalized weight management strategies in the years to come.
In our last podcast, we focused on discussing the intricate pathophysiologic connection between gut inflammation and obesity. In this discussion, I want to drill into the treatment landscape. Let's start with a brief understanding of how the intersection of obesity and IBD changes traditional treatment approaches.
Absolutely. That's a great question. As it sounds like you've already heard, there is a complex physiologic interplay between GI tract inflammation and adipose tissue in patients with underlying inflammatory bowel disease. Early studies have shown us that patients with more significant visceral adiposity may not respond as well to traditional biologic therapies that we so commonly use to treat IBD, and therefore they may actually have more IBD-related flares with increased intestinal inflammation, disease complications including stricturing, fistula, and need for surgery. In addition, our studies have suggested that patients with IBD and obesity not only have that increased need for surgery, but they also have higher rates of surgical complications due to technical difficulties with the surgeries with obesity. Therefore, it's crucial for us to recognize this and adjust our treatment approaches, both to target the obesity as well as to ensure proper treatment of the underlying inflammatory bowel disease.
And what are some recent data from pharmacologic trials that have extensively shaped our understanding of treating IBD patients with obesity?
There have actually been a few recent studies highlighting the impact of overweight and obesity on the pharmacokinetics of the biologic therapies that we use so commonly for our patients with IBD. Dr. Gil Melmed and his fantastic team at Cedars-Sinai published a great study showing that the optimal trough level, or the amount of infliximab in the blood necessary to achieve a steroid-free deep remission, was significantly higher in those with the highest percentage of visceral adiposity. And this was actually assessed on DEXA scans. The study demonstrated that higher doses of biologics such as Remicade may be needed in order to achieve appropriate drug levels to induce and maintain remission. While we don't have studies in other biologics, we think that this will be similar. Of interest in this study, neither BMI nor total body mass were associated with steroid-free clinical remission or endoscopic remission, and so it really highlights the importance of visceral adiposity. Further studies are certainly needed to better understand the impact of overweight and obesity on the absorption and volume distribution and even clearance of some of our common IBD therapies, and I look forward to these studies in the years to come.
That sounds great. And could you elaborate on the emerging treatments that can provide dual benefit for both obesity and IBD?
Absolutely. There's early data suggesting that the use of glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists, often known as GLP-1s, may provide a dual benefit for patients with both obesity and IBD. In our studies and from the work from our colleagues, we know that use of GLP-1s in patients with IBD are safe without increased disease flares or complications. The patients on GLP-1s who have IBD were actually reported minimal side effects, similar to those that were reported in the general population. And for many, the anti-motility effect, which slows down the GI transit, has been beneficial in reducing both stool frequency and improving stool consistency. Moreover, we now know that the GLP-1 therapy is effective for weight loss, and patients with IBD lost similar amounts of weight compared to those in the general population. Of even greater excitement in this area has come from the early data suggesting that GLP-1s may be effective at reducing inflammation, especially when combined with other IBD therapies. In our studies here at Mount Sinai, patients with IBD and obesity treated with a GLP-1 had significantly improved clinical remission rates. Other studies have similarly identified improvement in not only the luminal disease, but also in the extraintestinal manifestations, including the joint pain, independent of weight loss. This is all a very exciting area for future research, and we look forward to learning more about the use of these medications in patients with IBD.
Those sound like exciting next steps, Dr. Gold. Can you also elaborate on some practical steps clinicians can take to integrate pharmacologic findings into their care plans for patients living with both IBD and obesity?
First, I think it's important that gastroenterologists understand the rising prevalence of overweight and obesity in patients with IBD. While IBD was traditionally associated with malabsorption and perhaps underweight, we're now seeing that more and more patients are suffering from comorbid overweight and obesity. Second, it's important that gastroenterologists understand the impact of visceral adiposity, not only on cardiometabolic outcomes, but also on the IBD-related clinical outcomes, including the response to biologics, need for surgery, and surgical complications. It's also important that gastroenterologists understand that there are safe and effective anti-obesity medications available. In our cohort of patients that were studied prior to developing our multidisciplinary clinic, only 2% of prescriptions for anti-obesity therapy in patients with IBD were coming from the gastroenterologist. Simply assessing a patient's weight at every visit is a great way to start the conversation about healthy weight goals in our patients with IBD. From my standpoint, this is a crucial vital sign that should be part of every visit. Using open-ended questions when talking about weight goals as well as motivational interviewing can help identify where a patient is in their weight loss journey and how best to provide that support and guidance going forward. Ultimately, we hope to provide the knowledge and tools to support gastroenterologists in identifying and treating obesity in their patients with IBD in order to improve those clinical outcomes for our patients and provide truly patient-centered care.
Great. And along these lines, I wanted to talk a little bit about multidisciplinary care. How do you incorporate this into your practice?
This is such an important question. We established a multidisciplinary weight management clinic here at Mount Sinai about a year ago for patients with IBD, and that includes an IBD physician with nutrition obesity expertise, such as myself, an obesity-trained hepatologist with interest in metabolic disease, and a dietitian who's not only trained in weight loss strategies but also has expertise in IBD care. We have additional support from endocrinology, our advanced endoscopy colleagues, psychiatry, exercise physiologists, and even the bariatric surgeons. It's crucial to offer multidisciplinary care for our patients given their complex medical needs. Having a program with providers who are part of this multidisciplinary team helps streamline the care not only for the patients but also for the providers, especially in these complex cases. Using anti-obesity medications in patients with underlying GI illness requires the additional knowledge about the disease phenotype, the potential complications, and personalized dosing regimens. Through the Weightwise GI program here at Mount Sinai, we found that having this multidisciplinary team approach is the best way to provide safe, timely, and effective weight loss interventions for patients with IBD.
You recently presented at a symposium during DDW 2025 on this very topic. Could you share some highlights or new data that were presented at this meeting?
Of course. There was excellent data presented at DDW this year focused on obesity management and in particular for our patients with IBD. I think we've probably hit on many of these topics in the discussion today. However, it is helpful to summarize some of these key highlights from the meeting, and so I'll highlight four today. The first is the prevalence of overweight and obesity, which is rising not only in the U.S. population, but also in our patients with IBD. A recent study using a nationwide real-world data set demonstrated that about a third of patients with IBD currently are also suffering with obesity, and about two-thirds have overweight or obesity. Therefore, it's important to realize that this is impacting all of our clinical practices on a daily basis. Second is that overweight and obesity have a negative impact on IBD outcomes, leading to worsened clinical disease, including impaired response to traditional therapies such as biologics, increased need for surgery, higher rates of complications, fatigue, and poor quality of life. We learned that use of GLP-1s in patients with IBD is rising, which is excellent. We now understand that these medications are safe with limited side effects. And the side effects that are reported are similar to those in the general population, including reduced bowel frequency, mild nausea, decreased appetite, and some local skin reactions at the injection site. We also learned about the effectiveness of these medications, demonstrating that patients with IBD have had clinically significant weight loss, again, similar to that or even more so than what we're seeing in the general population. And finally, at DDW, they highlighted the early data suggesting that GLP-1 therapy may in fact be effective at reducing systemic inflammation and improving IBD-related outcomes. This is certainly an area for future research, and we look forward to learning more about the impact of GLP-1s as a treatment modality for patients with IBD in the years to come.
Great. Thank you for sharing those findings. And let's end with this. What are some general take-home thoughts you have for healthcare providers on how they should approach these conditions? What are your top-line concluding points for our audience?
Thank you. I hope the audience will take away an understanding of the prevalence and impact of overweight and obesity in patients with IBD and the importance of offering safe, timely, and effective treatment strategies. Moreover, I hope that gastroenterologists will feel knowledgeable and empowered to talk about weight with their patients and to identify overweight and obesity as a clinically significant condition that impacts our patients both cardiometabolically and in terms of their IBD outcomes.
That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much, Dr. Gold, for helping understand the evolving pharmacologic landscape when managing patients with both obesity and IBD. You have provided clear evidence that ongoing research in this area will lead to personalized therapy, which will be key in optimizing outcomes. We truly appreciate your time and the important work you are doing in this space. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. I welcome you to listen to the first podcast in this series, in which we talked about the intricate pathophysiologic interplay between gut inflammation and obesity. Med Learning Group also has several other podcasts and CME programs, many of which are on GI topics, on our website at www.medlearninggroup.com. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, Lily, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity. Thank you and have a wonderful day.